Tonight on ESPN2, in celebration of MLS's 25th season, we will relive some of the most unforgettable matches in league history. Starting 6 Eastern, the first MLS Cup from 96, then the 2001 Cup played just a few weeks after the 9/11 attacks, followed by David debut with the LA Galaxy in 2007. We wrap it up with last year's MLS Cup. All that and more on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. Meanwhile, one of my favorite things from over the weekend, one of Tom Brady's new teammates and receivers had the following tweet this weekend. He tweeted, "I didn't know hummus was that damn good." Let me bring Dan and Marcus into this. I have two thoughts. One, this seems to be Tom Brady's doing. Two, I thoroughly agree, except I already knew. Hummus is one of my absolute favorite things in the world. Marcus Spears, agree or disagree?
I disagree that it's one of my favorite things in the world, but it is good. The roasted red pepper I get from Zoe's Kitchen is fire. Can't wait till it opened back up, G.
Danny?
That's why I love my guy. That's why, because literally my favorite thing to go to Zoe's and get is the roasted red pepper hummus. You get some of the pita chips, some of the pita bread. You snack on a greenie. I got a dad joke about hummus for you.
Let me hear it.
My ex-girlfriend tried to steal my hummus once.
Yeah?
I told that chick, peace.
All right. Thank you for ruining the program as we have known it. That's Dan. That's Swagoo. We are busy all morning long. It is time to get up. All right. It is time. I'll admit it took me a second to get it. It's time to get up with America's favorite game. Today's an important day, and we'll tell you why. Then we're 2 weeks away. Time to put the pieces in place for the NFL draft, and we have all of the insight. And then it may very well be the greatest Hall of Fame class ever. Don't miss Charles Barkley live in a half hour on Kobe Bryant and Company, the 2020 class for the Hall of Fame. All that and more as we get up and go right now, with sources telling our Adam Schefter that over the weekend, high-level officials from multiple NFL teams are preparing to conduct the draft from home and not at their facilities. The draft begins 2 weeks from Thursday. Elsewhere, UFC 249, still scheduled for April 18th. Now appears the UFC is very close to securing a new venue for the event, likely on the West Coast. The current plan is for Tony Ferguson to fight Justin Gaethje, and that would be the headline. Elsewhere, as just mentioned, the 2020 Basketball Hall of Fame class was announced. All 8 finalists were selected. It is one of the great classes of all time, top to bottom. But, of course, the headline is Kobe Bryant, who tragically will go in posthumously, and he'll be joined with Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett. You would be hard-pressed to find a more decorated trio of players to be enshrined in a single year. The three combined for 48 All-Star appearances, 11 titles, and 4 MVPs. Elsewhere, speaking on a conference call with Major League Sports commissioners Saturday, President Trump said he believes the NFL season should start on time in September. He also said he hopes to have fans back by August and September. California Governor Gavin Newsom later said, quote, "I'm not anticipating that happening in this state." Of course, all of this remains to be seen. What we can tell you is that as of today, plans are being disrupted. Shefty tweeting this morning, "Today would have been the start of off-season workouts for teams with new head coaches. Mike McCarthy in Dallas, Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland, Joe Judge in New York, Matt Rhule in Carolina, Ron Rivera in Washington, but only virtual off-season work now." And this is obviously frivolous in the scheme of things, but we're a sports show, and so we'll talk about the impact of all of this on sports, and we will maintain the position that we have from the beginning. It costs us nothing to be optimistic. We will not be unrealistic with you here, but we will be optimistic and hope for the best. And with that thought in mind, Dan Orlovsky, what is your feeling as now some of the teams that would be on the field getting work in are missing that? We work our way towards the draft, and we hope for the best come this fall.
Yeah, it's really hope for the best, plan for the worst, Greeny. And this is an opportunity for the NFL, really from the top down, Roger Goodell all the way down, to display its leadership. Because here's the reality. If the NFL starts on time, that's going to be easy for them. But the NFL, and again, all of its leaders need to have multiple plans in place for the NFL to start at this time or to look a little bit differently. No fans or reduced amount of time or a later date. So when that opportunity presents itself, itself. The leadership is ready for it, Greeny. And I am like you. I will remain optimistic. But as we sit here on April 6th, listen, if we get any form of football in September, I'll be thankful for it, because what it would represent is we're in a better place at that moment than we are right now. And I'm going to be super thankful for that. So I'll remain optimistic every single day as we move towards that.
Yeah, Marcus, we were all looking for whatever information we could get out of the president's conversation with all of the various sports commissioners. What are your thoughts today?
Gene, let me internalize this a little bit, man. I remember my eighth year going into Dallas, didn't know if I would be released, make the team, be traded, or what. There were mumblings going on around. And as a player, I had to have a central focus on getting myself ready to play the season. The one thing that I couldn't do was afford to get caught off guard. And that's the thing. These players don't know if this season is going to start. We could find out information, and obviously being optimistic, we could find out in a week or two that we're starting to flatten this curve and things are starting to get back to some normalcy, or we're seeing the data support that we may be getting back to sports. You have to be ready to play a football season. That's my kind of note to all of the players, and these guys are professionals and they understand that. But you have to approach this offseason, regardless of the changes and the differences, like you're going to play football. So it encompasses everything you can do individually to get ready to play a football season.
I think that's really well said. All right, we will continue to cover all of that sort of news for you here, and that's my promise to you. We will be optimistic, but not unrealistic. Meanwhile, there is news of sort of the more comparatively on the field variety, and it begins with Cam Newton, who is, of course, still on the market as we get closer and closer to the draft. Friday, Warren Moon was with the guys on First Take, explaining why he thinks Cam is going to have a hard time catching on if it is going to be a backup role. Here's what Warren Moon said.
He's not a guy I don't see going somewhere where he can be a backup. He still brings a lot to the table if he's healthy. The thing that concerns me is his, you know, his personality. He's a big-time personality. He brings a lot to the table when he comes to a team. And there's some teams that probably could deal with that, and there are other teams that don't want their leader to be that type of personality. So that's where he's going to find the problem in trying to find another home.
All right, so I have a few different topics I want to get to. I want to start with that one on the clock. 60 seconds on the clock. Orlovsky, do you agree with Warren Moon?
I disagree that that's a big hurdle for him to jump over, Greeny. The biggest hurdle for Cam to jump over is him proving to the teams that are options that he is a healthy option for them. And if he is a healthy option, what are Cam Newton's expectations? There needs to be a great deal of communication between him and the team, and then the team to him. And if they can figure out a group of teams that see it the same way as Cam Newton, he's going to be on a team at some point. But the expectations need to be seen the same way between him and those teams.
Swagoo, is his personality a problem?
Personality is not a problem for the teams that are willing to bring Cam Newton in. What will be a problem is teams that's asking him to be a backup. Remember, Greeny, go back to college. Cam Newton transferred from Florida, went to Auburn, and won the Heisman and the national championship. There is no one that is going to tell Cam Newton, if he's healthy enough, that he's going to play backup in the NFL.
Yeah. All right. So we'll keep an eye on that situation. I'm going to give you 60 seconds on another one. On Friday, Houston Texans general manager and coach Bill O'Brien addressed the DeAndre Hopkins trade for the first time. He said the deal was, quote, in the best interest of our team. He added that Hopkins has 3 years left on his deal and wanted a raise. 60 seconds on the clock. Marcus, your face is already telling us the answer. What do you think of this explanation?
Hell no, it ain't in the best interest of the team. The best player on your team just left outside of Deshaun Watson. And look, receivers are asking for contracts earlier because of a new CBA. Bill O'Brien, obviously, G, you know this whole trade rubbed me the wrong way. I'm still not recovered from it, obviously, by the way that I'm talking. But the fact that Bill O'Brien would say that was in the best interest of the Houston Texans, get the hell out of here. Tell me who the number one is on the Houston Texans roster, D.O.
I agree with you, bro. Listen, no quarterback wide receiver duo has more touchdown connections in the last 3 years than Hopkins and Watson. And so you're going to tell me the second place team would be Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers. Is Matt LaFleur going to come out and say, we had to move Devontae Adams because it was best for us? Or Cooper Kupp and Jared Goff? You know what? We got to move Cooper Kupp because it's best for us. Bill O'Brien, this wasn't best for the Texans. This was best for you. And your job is to do what's best for the Texans, and you failed to do that.
Yeah, it does feel as though the conflict that existed between the two of them played some role in this, and we'll sort of leave it at that. I have one more for you guys. Bears general manager Ryan Pace and their head coach Matt Nagy confirmed there will be an open competition for the starting quarterback job between Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. Dan Orlovsky, 60 seconds on the clock. Is that the right way to approach this in Chicago?
It is the right way. I'm a little surprised that they came out and said it now, but I will give Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy a shout out. I love their transparency. If I'm Mitchell Trubisky, I'm going to go find that Michael Phelps and Chad Lacrosse, the South African swimmer in the Olympics, when Lacrosse is peeking over at Michael Phelps, and Phelps is just hyper-focused on his goal. And that's who Mitchell Trubisky needs to become. He needs to be hyper-focused on his goal. Do not see Nick Foles, because you cannot have an off day, Mitchell Trubisky. If you have an off day, Nick Foles will jump you. Hyper-focus on every single day and show that you are mentally ready to take over that organization.
Marcus?
Gee,
yeah.
Do I look shocked?
You do
not. I don't look shocked at all. I told you from the beginning that this was what this was about. Look, oh, the word today is optimism. We can be optimistic that Mr. Trubisky is going to make this jump and make the Chicago Bears brass very happy, but that ain't what they planning for. They brought in Nick Foles to start. I'm telling you, I'm going to let it go.
No,
I don't look worried.
Don't
I'm not
let it
surprised.
Go. I want to keep talking about this. Finish that thought. You believe they brought Nick Foles there to be the starter.
Okay. Well, absolutely. Listen, G, you don't bring, first of all, I tell you guys this all the time, and Dan, former quarterback, obviously we argue on this point. Nobody is mum on when you have a starting quarterback in the building. No one minces words. No one says this, well, there's a possibility. Just like when Tepper said about Cam, we'll wait for the physical to come back to see. Nobody is mum on that. When you bring in Nick Foles, all of the things revolving around Mitch Trubisky, the hope is that Nick Foles beats Mitch Trubisky out and becomes the starter, and the Bears have a quarterback to compensate for this defense. That is the hope.
You agree with that, Dan?
I would totally disagree with that. If Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy were to sit down and go, what is the best thing for us long term? That's what everyone gets into this business for, long term. The best thing for them is not for Nick Foles to win that job. It's for Nick Foles to push Mr. Trubisky so much that Trubisky becomes their starting quarterback for 10 years. And then they're the general manager and head coach there for 10 years. So I disagree. They want Mr. Trubisky to win this job, and Nick Foles is there to push him and be the safety net as a just in case.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that part of it. I don't know that he will, but I think that's what they would like in a perfect world. Anyway, we'll talk about it as we go. Man, we'll also talk about Aaron Rodgers. He was drafted by Green Bay to replace a legend. You'll hear why the Packers need to think about Rodgers' heir in this draft. We'll talk about that and, of course, this. Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, they each won 5 titles. They were announced as members of the Basketball Hall of Fame class this weekend. Is it the best class ever? Charles Barkley and Jalen Rose join us to talk about that and more next. Get Up on ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and the NFL draft is fast approaching. Let's talk about some of the best team fits at quarterback with Orlovsky. Dan, Jalen Hurts, best fit.
San Francisco 49ers, Greeny. If you look at Jalen Hurts, all he's done is develop as a passer, okay? And so we take the San Francisco 49ers, who are a run-dominant football team, and they have a head coach who looks at players and says, tell me what he can be, not what he isn't. And he would take Jalen Hurts and use him in this run game to develop as a runner, but also huge chunks in their play-action game. It's a great fit.
All right, how about Jordan Love? What's the best fit for him?
Now, Jordan Love needs to be on the Patrick Mahomes plan, so I put him at the Green Bay Packers. Jordan Love is this guy that has this freakish kind of talent, but he needs to learn how to play quarterback. And you're talking about Matt LaFleur, a guy who totally understands that position, and how you tie in your feet and progressions with where the football should go to. And so you're going to have the opportunity to sit him and have no pressure to play right away underneath Aaron Rodgers, but develop as a quarterback, and it's an ideal place for him to be on the Mahomes plan.
I have so much about that I want to talk to you about, and we will, but let's get to the next one. What's the best fit for Justin Herbert?
Okay, Justin Herbert as a player is intellectual, right? He can look at the defense and go, okay, here comes the pressure or control line of scrimmage. He's smart enough to understand that stuff. But he needs a coach that is going to unlock his ability to be aggressive. And Josh McDaniels is this creative play caller that is willing to do things a little bit unordinary or unorthodox and push the football downfield when it presents itself. And Justin Herbert needs a coach to give him that, and New England would be that place.
All right, and finally, how about Tua?
Yeah, the Miami Dolphins. First of all, they have a guy, Ryan Fitzpatrick, that's going to be their starter. So you don't need to rush Tua onto the field. Second of all, they have a general manager and a coach that aren't really fighting for their job. They don't need to win right now to save their job. So there's not going to be the pressure to put Tua there. Tua can go and sit and learn and be a part of a long-term plan that builds this roster inside out.
Well, he remains the most compelling figure in this draft. And to no one's surprise, McShay projects that Joe Burrow will go number one overall to the Bengals, and then he has Tua going 5 to Miami. Surprisingly, he has Jordan Love and Justin Herbert both in the top 10. After that, he doesn't see another quarterback going until Jacob Eason in the second round. Meanwhile, back to Tua. Rex Ryan was here on Friday. He had these thoughts on the Bama QB.
I think this is the biggest gamble in the history of the NFL draft. And the reason I say that is you can't get your doctors, don't get their hands on them. All that kind of stuff. One thing we know, this young man is absolutely an amazing quarterback. However, everybody knows about the three operations he's had. Really? Well, I've heard he's had five operations. So if I only have one first round pick, I think it's too risky. I think if I have multiple picks like the Dolphins do, they can probably take that gamble, and I think they will.
But not package them and move up. That's what he said. Marcus Spears, is Tua Tagovailoa the biggest gamble in draft history?
When you talk about risk-reward, yes, G, but I thought Jalen Smith, when Dallas drafted him, was the biggest gamble because he had nerve damage in his knee, and no one knew if he would ever play football again. And let me contextualize this. From a position standpoint, from what Tua could possibly be for your franchise, absolutely is the biggest gamble. But when we're just talking about medical, the fact that they can't see Tua and the fact that they were able to see Jalen Smith and still saw the damage, a lot of teams went away. Dallas decided to draft him. He turned out to be one of the best linebackers in the NFL. To me, that was the biggest gamble, even though you were able to see the medicals. Risk reward, and you talk about what could be, it's Tua. I agree with Rex.
How about you, Dan?
I got a lot of issues with all this. First of all, Greeny, risk comes from not knowing what you're doing, all right? And so we talk about Tua right now in absolutes, and we talk about everybody else in optimism. Like, we talk about Tua like, nope, he's going to get hurt, and he's going to be a failure as a pick. And we talk about everybody else with optimistic kind of eyeglasses on. Like, okay, Justin Herbert's going to play for 15 years at Pro Bowl level, and I don't think that's fair to Tua. Here's the reality. Tua's going to get drafted, and you know what's more important to where Tua gets gets drafted is what you do when you draft Tua. So the team, don't rush Tua on the field. Know what you're doing. Team, support him with a really good coaching staff that understands what he does really well. Know what you're doing. Draft really well at the offensive line. Put good skilled people around him. Because if you do that, then this risk that we keep talking about isn't as big as we make it all out to be. Like, we talk about this, about Tua, like, man, first time he steps on the field, he's going to get hurt. Like, if he's the third pick, like last year Quinnen Williams was, Quinnen Williams to the Jets got $32 million, right? That was the risk financially. If Tua's the third pick this year, it's going to be something like that. So what's more risky? What's riskier? Drafting Tua third this year or giving a guy like, Jimmy G, like $75 million, or Ryan Tannehill $91 million guaranteed, or Kirk Cousins $66 million. What do we deem as more risky? Doing that or taking Tua third and giving him $30 million guaranteed?
It's an interesting way to look at it. You know, Marcus, and this isn't the time for this conversation, but in the new NFL, where the best thing to have is a quarterback who's still on his rookie contract, I think the pressure for these guys to start playing earlier exists. And I think that's one of the things you have working against you in the case of Tua, who many people believe still, despite what his people are saying, there needs to be a medical redshirt.
No doubt, G, and I think people get it misconstrued. I think my partner in crime right here is getting it misconstrued. It's not about the injuries. It's about the fear of durability. That's the issue. Like, everybody is of the same vein that Tua has recovered or is recovering very well from this hip injury. He obviously had the high ankle sprains. We were covering him when he was at Alabama. The issue is, will he be durable enough? That's what everybody is trying to figure out. The hip, I think everybody can get answers about that even without this process happening. So the durability is the issue everybody is afraid of.
Well, we will start to get the answers 2 weeks from Thursday. You will see all 3 days of the NFL draft live on ESPN starting April 23rd. We'll have the coverage here. The College Game Day crew will have their presentation of the draft on ABC. You can also follow the draft on ESPN Deportes and ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. And NFL Network will have draft coverage as well, so we will have this covered for you from every direction. Coming up, this year's may just be the greatest basketball Hall of Fame class ever. What do Charles Barkley and Jalen think? We'll ask them next. Get up, ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Back on Get Up. Today is day 26 of the NBA hiatus as the U.S. continues to battle the spread of the coronavirus. Could the league, the NBA, be preparing for the season to be completely canceled? Our Brian Windhorst was on in our last hour, discussed what the league's next steps could look like.
I'm going to say this very clearly. Testing, testing, testing. Forget about fans and arenas. Forget about bubbles. The only way this is happening is with mass testing that is available, political free, where you don't have to worry about taking it away from somebody who needs it, and you can get quick results. Until there's testing, everything that we're talking about here is pie in the sky. That's the reality that is shown us in Asia. That's the reality the NBA has.
Now, I'll make the point again. We are going to be optimistic but not unrealistic as we approach all of this. But right now, we are going to have a lot of fun because you can see them on my screen. Jalen Rose and the Hall of Famer Charles Barkley are live with us here. Fellas, it is great to see you. And I want to talk about the Hall of Famers, but let's get a quick thought. Charles, we've not spoken to you in quite some time. What are your overall thoughts and what are you hearing from people as we all hope that the NBA is able to come back and resume their season at some point?
Well, I think right now they're going to have to wait till the end of April before they have any more conversations on resuming the season. The month of April is a wash. I think we're going to reconvene at the end of April and then make a decision going forward. But the one thing that concerns me, I think the owners got to vote soon on whether they're going to pay the players. I think this is going to be the first paycheck they miss April the 15th. I think that's when this whole thing gonna start to get really real and really interesting.
In what way, Charles? What do you expect the players to do? What do you expect the reaction to be if that does happen, which is expected?
Well, you know, Greeny, we always talk about the elite players in the NBA. Majority of the players, it's kind of like the NFL. I didn't realize that 60% of the NFL players made the minimum until they was talking about the CBA in the last month. It's probably similar to that in the NBA. The NBA have a salary structure where it's really, really top heavy. So those guys are not going to be affected by not getting paid. We're going to have a lot of players who are not going to get paid, who are going to struggle financially if they don't get paid.
Going to be interesting to see where that goes. Jalen, what are your thoughts as you wake up on this Monday morning?
I agree with Wendy about making sure that testing was available. We would hope over the next 30 to 60 days that actually happens, not only with enough masks for people across the country, but enough ventilators and enough testing. We didn't necessarily handle this right initially, but now that it is here, I would hope that at that point, over the next 60 days, we will be able to test the NBA players and find a way to resume a season. And it shouldn't be a reason to panic. And I know that football is going to start in September. But if the NBA was able to play some basketball in July or August, that's fine. Go into September. I don't mind seeing playoff basketball between LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard. I'm still going to watch Tom Brady and Drew Brees on a Sunday. But I still want to see the Greek Freak. And I believe that level of enjoyment is something that society would really be deserving of at that period of time.
Now, you've been steadfast in that through the beginning of this. All right, guys, what I really wanted to talk about today is the Hall of Fame class from the weekend, because it is one of the genuinely great classes of all time. The eight players and coaches won a combined 17 titles. Kobe and Duncan leading the way, 5 each. Kim Mulkey has won 3 as Baylor's head coach. They combined to win more than 6,300 games. On the players' side, Tim Duncan won 1,158 games on his own. Head coach Barbara Stevens also eclipsed the 1,000 win mark. And this class is, of course, headlined by the trio of Kobe and Duncan and Garnett. They combined for 48 All-Star selections, by far the most combined All-Stars by any trio to retire within a single season. So you guys played against all three of them. And I just thought the fans would enjoy hearing you guys tell some stories. Charles, we'll start with you. Ms. Jalen has legendary games against Kobe. We all know about those. What are your recollections of playing against the young Kobe Bryant late in your career?
Well, Kobe Bryant is the best basketball player I've seen compared to Michael Jordan. I think Michael is the greatest I've ever seen and played against. But the only guy I've always said this, Kobe Bryant is the closest I've ever seen. I didn't get to play against Kareem in his prime or Wilt or Bill Russell or LeBron. But I'm telling you, Kobe Bryant's the best player I've ever seen other than Michael Jordan. Tim Duncan, no disrespect to Kevin McHale, is the greatest power forward ever. Kevin McHale's the best player I ever played against. And I'll tell you this, Kevin Garnett is one of my favorite players. With the exception of Russell Westbrook, I've never seen two NBA players play as hard as Kevin Garnett and Russell Westbrook night in, night out. There's a lot of great players, a lot of great Hall of Famers, but Russell Westbrook, who's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day, and Kevin Garnett are the two hardest working players I've ever seen and played against.
Let's do them each individually for a moment. So, Jalen, if I asked you, and there's a lot to choose from here, what is the single most significant memory you have of playing against Kobe Bryant? What's the first one you choose?
Well, it actually was during the 2000 NBA Finals when he had his coming out party. See, a lot of people celebrate the successes, but they underestimate the adversity a lot of these guys overcome and the perseverance in order to become great players and Hall of Famers like Charles Barkley. And Kobe Bryant, a couple of years prior, Greeny, against Utah, he shot like 4 air balls at the end of the game. And then in that finals, it was 2-1 Lakers. We were playing at Indiana. We had a chance to tie the series. And the Big Diesel fouled out. And all of a sudden, they give the basketball to Kobe Bryant. And he takes over. He puts on the show late in the game. He looks over at his bench. He looks over at Shaq and tells Phil,
get down or lay down. He points his hands to the floor. And I know youngsters see LeBron James doing it right now, but Kobe was doing it back then, wearing number 8, rocking an afro. We had a chance to tie that series, Chuck. I would be wearing a ring. Imagine, the world wouldn't be much different if Kobe had 4, the late great, and I had 1. But that coming out party stopped it from happening, as you know.
Charles, go ahead. You know what I want to ask you, Charles, is you mentioned how similar he is to Jordan. And Jordan had that same thing late in the game. And you obviously saw this up close and personal a lot. Late in the game, put the ball in my hands. He wanted to take that shot. What is that quality those two guys had?
Well, Green, it's kind of like a closer. You go back to that Michael Jordan commercial where you talk about all the shots he missed. A lot of guys, and Jalen knows this, a lot of guys don't have the self-esteem, the confidence, the bravado to never worry about failing. A lot of guys, like if they miss one shot, they're not going to take another game-winning shot for the next 2 weeks unless everything's going great for them. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, them guys always wanted the ball. They're not worried about failing. You know, Jalen talk about shooting air balls. Hey, I don't want to bring up any names, but we've seen guys who miss big shots and never recover. We've seen that in all sports. But Kobe Bryant, even shooting those air balls in Utah, that man was obsessed with winning. He didn't worry about his teammates' feelings. And listen, when you say that, who's the other athlete who's the greatest ever? We always said he would fight with his teammates, didn't get along with all his teammates, but he was going to win at all costs. We've only said that about 2 guys in NBA history, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Them the only guys, and y'all been doing a great job of teasing that documentary. Everybody can't wait to see when Michael says, I just wanted to win at all costs. Listen, Kobe Bryant wanted to win at all costs. That's what separates those guys.
Let's give Duncan a moment here, Jalen, because there's probably never been an all-time great who had as little fanfare and asked for as little fanfare as he did. What was it like being on the floor with him?
So for Kobe Bryant and KG, they came straight out of high school and were phenomenons as they grew into their NBA game. Tim Duncan was a seasoned college player, played 4 years at Wake Forest, got a chance as a young player to learn alongside David Robinson, and who was able to nurture him. Pop became the head coach. He's the most stable, great player in the history of the NBA, on and off the floor. You won't see another guy play 20 straight years for the same team and make the playoffs each year. And all 3 of these guys, and Chuck will appreciate this, back in the day, usually your best player, it wasn't just the guy who led the team in scoring. You had to bring it on both ends. And that's what all 3 of these guys, led by KG and Tim Duncan, did. Tim Duncan was the best defensive player, also would rebound the basketball. And also for a 7-foot guy, his touch, his 15, 18-foot bank shot, facing up playing against smaller guys and against larger guys. Usually the 7-foot guy, Greeny, dominated you by dunks. Tim Duncan dominated you by skill, and that's what helped make him be an all-time great.
Did he talk at all on the floor? Either of you guys, Chuck, did he?
No.
Say anything.
Well, he never talked, but I want to pick it back on something Jalen said. One of the reasons I really admire Tim Duncan, Greeny, is I'm trying to think, has there ever been a superstar, the greatest player at his position, who was able to relinquish and let other guys, when he was past his prime or wasn't as great as he was, he let Ginobili and Parker take over and didn't say a word? I mean, that's really hard for a guy, because we all got egos. But for a guy to be the greatest power forward ever and have a smooth transition into getting older and say, I'm all right with Parker and Ginobili, even Kawhi Leonard also, he just wanted to win and win more championships. That's something to be said for that, because a lot of guys, when they get older, they still want to be treated like the man.
No doubt about it. Jalen, a moment for Kevin Garnett here. What was it like on the floor against that incredibly intense KG?
Well, I came front. I hate it when he guarded me because this dude embodied playing positionless basketball. And a lot of what you see in Giannis, a lot of that is what KG was doing straight out of high school. He could guard a center. He could guard a point guard. And Chuck talked about his toughness and his intangibles and his intensity. The guy's always thumping his chest, hitting his head on the backstop, always spitting, always just bringing a level of intangibles that don't show up in the box score. He was one of those guys that I always played against and wished that he was my teammate.
Charles, a final word on KG.
Well, I used to hate that dude because you'd play him in like game 26 in the season. You play him in game like 52 and game like 82. He's playing like they were all game sevens. I'm like, young fella, calm down. We got 82 of these games to go. I mean, Jalen, hey, I'm going to put it back into it. I said this earlier. I've been in the NBA for close to 40 years now. Russell Westbrook and Kevin Garnett played harder than any two players I've ever seen in the NBA, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Guys, I love you both for doing this. Thank you so much. Both of you, stay healthy and safe, and we'll see you both soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us, man. Hey, Greeny, keep up the great work. I know it's tough, but keep it up.
We're doing great. Thank you, Charles. Jalen, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you both, guys. And we have more Hall of Fame talk with Stephen A. on the way as we continue here on Get Up. This is one of the most decorated classes ever. Stephen A. will weigh in with his thoughts as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up. We're about to talk about the Ravens, and so let's bring in a former Raven, Dominique Foxworth, for the answer to this question. Who's the only player in Ravens history to catch 100 passes in a season?
First, that's absurd that there's only been one, but I'm going to guess Derek Mason.
Derek Mason is correct. I got it wrong. I actually would have thought it was Sharp, but Shannon Sharp, but the answer is
Take
Derek
that,
Mason.
Tim Bow. Don't call him Lizzie.
He caught 103 passes in the year 2007. Neek was not on that team, but he was Mason's teammate later on. All right, well done, Dominique Foxworth. Let's talk about a guy who, if he winds up in Baltimore, might catch a lot of passes, and that's free agent wide receiver Antonio Brown, who was working out with Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson and Baltimore wideout Hollywood Brown yesterday. AB posted video of the workout to his Instagram story, and Hollywood posted a photo of the three of them together. You can see the picture there, and they certainly look like they're having a good time and they're working out together. And so it does bring up sort of an interesting possibility. Antonio Brown is a guy who we believe wants to play and is looking for a place to go. We originally thought maybe Tampa. The Buccaneers have completely closed the door on that. So should it be open here? Let me bring Mike Tannenbaum and Ryan Clark into this conversation. RC, I will start with you. If you're the Ravens, are you giving serious consideration to bringing in Antonio Brown?
I think the first thing, if I'm the Ravens, I'm more concerned that they took a picture hugging. I mean, I'm around here giving air high fives in my house. So that's probably the first thing. Secondly, I don't know. I just don't think you bring Antonio Brown into what's going on in Baltimore. I was actually talking to someone from their organization yesterday about some upcoming guys in this draft, and they were saying, he kept saying, you know, this is the only place I've been. I'm so lucky. I'm so blessed. They know how to do it here. They know how to build a program. They have a culture. And I don't think Antonio Brown fits into that culture right now. You have a young quarterback that can be erratic throwing the ball. And we've seen Antonio Brown and the way he starts to behave when he isn't getting his targets or he isn't getting his catches. And I don't necessarily know if that's something you want to bring into your young MVP's career when he's at the precipice or at the point where he can actually ascend to be one of the top tier quarterbacks in this league year after year after year. I think you have a good foundation. Now you look to get a guy in this draft to add on the outside, but bringing Antonio Brown in shouldn't be something that Coach Harbaugh and this team is thinking about right now.
Mike Tannenbaum, what do you think?
I absolutely sign for two reasons. Number one, from a football standpoint, he's the perfect fit. When you go back from 2013 to 2018, he's had more explosive touchdowns than anybody else of 20 yards or more. And when you look at guys like Nick Boyle, Mark Andrews, two good tight ends, he's a great complement to that in terms of being explosive. And then when you talk about off the field, to RC's concern, you have Hollywood Brown and you have Lamar Jackson working out with him every single day. And that's the sort of infrastructure and support you'll need from a teammate standpoint to put him in the best position to be successful. So I think it works on the field, and more importantly, it works off the field.
Can you follow up on that thought? Because you said that in our meeting this morning, and it struck me. I mean, Lamar Jackson and Hollywood Brown are still very young players. So you're not necessarily talking about guys who are like a Tom Brady we talked about last year, that maybe that's the kind of veteran leadership a team would have to have. Here he seems to have befriended two younger guys on the team. Take me through that thinking there.
Yeah, so right now what we're missing in football is when the relationships are formed in terms of the off-season program, the OTAs. They're actually doing that down here in South Florida. They're working out every day, and that's when you really form meaningful relationships. And Coach Harbaugh is excellent at putting out problems and creating the correct culture. So I think you bring him in, you have those guys around him that they've already formed these relationships, and you bring him in on a one-year deal. We saw the Aldon Smith signing. It's a boom or bust signing, very little downside. And I would structure that contract where I protect Antonio Brown's upside, but if we hit any bump in the road, I would cut him. I would cut him before opening day if necessary, because Lamar Jackson is the future. But in the right structure, Greeny, this could be a very opportunistic contract and a great opportunity for them because, again, his explosiveness is a great complement to what they already have.
Really quick, RC, just as far as what he actually does on the field, do you like the fit with what they're doing, that unique offense in Baltimore?
Hey, man, when you have Antonio Brown, I like the fit offensively on the grass anywhere. He's one of the most dominant receivers of all time, not just of his era, historically. And so, yes, if Antonio Brown is the guy that could get along in your locker room, you absolutely want him on your team. It's why Tom Brady wanted him on the team. But I think so much more goes into having Antonio Brown on your team. And I want to see him play. I miss seeing him out there doing what he does best. But when you have a young guy like Lamar Jackson, then you have a Hollywood Brown, someone who knows Antonio Brown, who could be influenced by him, I think you have to be very careful about what you're doing to your culture when you're bringing new pieces in.
All right, guys, stay with me here as we continue our day on ESPN. Coming up next, it is First Take. That'll be followed by a two-hour SportsCenter, then NFL Live. SportsCenter's back at 5 with the PTI guys. Kornheiser and Wilbon are joining the show, and then we'll cap the day with SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, 11 Eastern. We're here with you all day on ESPN. And as we were just discussing, could AB in Baltimore be a possibility? First Take is coming up in just a few minutes. They'll talk about the moves the Cowboys have been making, all that and more as we continue. First Take is 10 minutes from now, right here on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and of course, First Take is following us in just a few minutes, and one of the topics they'll discuss is the one that we were just discussing. This is a photo posted by Hollywood Brown of himself with his quarterback Lamar Jackson and free agent wide receiver Antonio Brown, who've been working out together, and it does raise the interesting possibility Antonio Brown is looking for a team. Might Baltimore make sense? Let's find out with Stephen A. Smith, who joins us live again just a few minutes away from First Take. Stephen A., what do you think of the idea? Do you like the concept of Antonio Brown to Baltimore?
Hell no. Absolutely not. And we all know why. It's because of his mentality. Let's be very, very clear about something. There's nothing to discuss about Antonio Brown's game. He's all world. One of the greatest receivers we've ever seen in NFL history. There is nothing to debate about his skill set and what a definite big time acquisition it would be for the Baltimore Ravens from a talent perspective. But here's the reality of the situation. When you've got a guy like Lamar Jackson, who's obviously a stud runner as a quarterback, but still is evolving as a passer, can you trust the patience of Antonio Brown? No. And I keep bringing up the issue of trust. When it comes to the Baltimore Ravens, let's look at this. Defensively, this is one of the top three defenses in the National Football League. They were fifth against the rush. They were sixth against the rush, I believe. Fifth against the pass, and you had a situation where they was like fourth in total yards allowed, something along those lines. They had the number one offense in football, the number one running attack in football. They struggled as passers with 27th. Their ranking was 27th. So we understand that Antonio Brown would be an upgrade. Here's the problem. You still have a quarterback that's relatively young, and he could be influenced in a negative fashion, meaning being frustrated. Antonio Brown cannot be trusted. That's the issue with him. This guy, no matter where he's been, he's thrown Mike Tomlin under the bus. He's thrown Big Ben Roethlisberger under the bus. He's thrown Juju Smith-Schuster under the bus. He insulted Mike Mayock, the general manager for the Oakland Raiders. He stood up John Gruden. And when his own agent tried to get him on a conference call with John Gruden, he taped the damn conversation. So much so that Drew Rosenhaus, as I told you the other day, when he decided to let him go, Greeny, what did he do? He said, I got to let the world know because this guy don't know what he'll project to the world because he might be secretly taping me, for crying out loud. This is the Antonio Brown that you're talking about. You cannot have a relatively young squad in a young locker room and bring somebody in there who can't be trusted. The first order of business for Antonio Brown is to prove that he can be trusted. That's the issue right now. You don't mess with him if you're Baltimore.
He's going to have a hard time proving it. I have to let you go, but just do you think Antonio Brown, assuming we have football and all that is normal this year, do you think he plays?
I think it's in grave jeopardy. There's always somebody that'll bring a talent like that on. We understand that. But when it comes to issues of trust, that's where people run away from you. People don't trust Antonio Brown right now. That is his issue.
Yeah, I agree. Stephen A., again, just about 3 minutes away from First Take. Great to see you, my friend. Thank you so much. Let you get ready for that, and I'll finish up with Mike. I'll ask you guys the same question. Dominique, do you believe we talked about the fit in Baltimore. We could talk about the fit in a lot of different places. When it were all said and done, do you think someone takes a shot on him?
I don't think so. I think, obviously, the fit, he fits everywhere. But I don't think anyone wants to take a chance on him because we still aren't sure if he can even play the start of the season, that there could be a suspension pick. Mm-hmm.
How about you, RC?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think his time has passed. He had his opportunity with the Patriots. That was the team everyone thought he could make it on, and he couldn't even do it there. And there's been more erratic behavior ever since. And so for me, I don't think a team takes Antonio Brown, and I think he has realized that they're going to play football without me.
There are also significant legal issues that have to be resolved, and the NFL has to make its own decision. The reality is, before he can play, the NFL will have to make a decision on whether he's going to be suspended or not, and that obviously will get taken into account here as well. Let's sort of period, new paragraph, and move on to something much more pleasant to finish with. Now, these have been obviously unusual times and circumstances for all of us, and we are here every single day, the family that is the group that puts together the show every single day, trying to just take your mind off of what's going on here as best we can for 2 hours in the morning. And so we are trying to also bring our families together. So, Neek, I'm told you have a few special guests who might be able to join us here for a moment.
Taking a break from homeschool. Come on in, guys. My wife is teaching them, and they've been excited about this. I told her there might be a chance. This is my oldest, Avery. This is my second, my son, Declan, and my youngest little girl, Emerson, right here. They are cereal experts. So if they want to get in on the cereal debate, what's your favorite cereal, Amy?
Wait,
I say Emmy. You're Avery. I know. I think. And Declan. Yeah. What's your favorite cereal?
Lucky Charms.
Lucky Charms? Okay. What about you?
Lucky Charms.
I'm not raising them right because there's only one cereal to eat, and that's Cinnamon Toast Crunch. We all know that.
It's
Cinnamon Toast Crunch is it.
That's
all we get is Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
That's it. All right, so no we seem to have started a debate in the Foxworth household. But that's the best kind of debate to have. Guys, I love you, and thank you both for being here, and thank all of you for getting up with us. And first and foremost, as every day, we thank all of the first responders and the medical professionals who are keeping us safe and helping us through this extraordinary time. It's something none of us really know exactly how to handle, but we know that you are where we need you desperately, and there's no way in the world we'd be safe without you. We can't thank you enough. And we'll leave you with this one more look at the Foxworth household, which is going to be complicated all day. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take is next.
Yeah, it's not broken.